mindfulness of awkward silence. No, I was. See, I had a story. So, why did the Buddhist monk deny Novocaine at the dentist? He turned down the Novocaine at the dentist office because he wanted to transcend dental medication. Gong! Here comes the cane. All right. So, So this morning I woke up with a real sense of the fact that a profound amount of trust has been placed in me by all of you, and I just want to acknowledge that and acknowledge my appreciation of that, and acknowledge what a beautiful thing that is. That trust actually is what empowers me in this seat. I don't have any power of my own, only what I receive from others. In Zen, they say students make the teacher, you know? And the empowerment comes from the students, goes into the teacher, and then goes back out, and then back in. And it's a cycle, right? This is an eye-level experience. However, that there is trust here, and that there is trust in the holding environment we have created and the foundation that we built yesterday, means that we can go further today. And one of the other things that I am reflectively appreciating about our experience together so far is the hunger, actually, in the room for the emotional work. You know, I talked about Freud's term affect phobia yesterday, and sometime around lunch I was struck. I was like, I don't think they have it. You know. What's that? Right, exactly. Exactly. But it's an ironic thing that is very germane to the path when you see a workshop that's on trauma and you're like, ooh, trauma. I want to go to there. And so I'm going to fast forward a little bit here in honor of that so we can get to the emotional lives that we have not allowed ourselves to live, as I said yesterday. So the basic setup for the next practice is like this. So the truth is, all clinical diagnoses are just extreme versions of something that we all have going on every day. Everybody gets anxious or worried about something. But do you get stuck in an endless mind loop about the worst possible scenario that could happen, and then that repeats and keeps you up at night, or keeps you up for 3 days? That's called OCD. Or do you get so worried that you feel like you're having a heart attack and you call 911 because you think that this is really it? Because that's called panic attack. Right? And then if that happens regularly, then we call that panic disorder. Everybody gets sad. But do you find yourself not being able to get out of bed for 3 days to the effect that you lose your job or you lose friends over your inability to cope with your hopelessness? That's called clinical depression. Okay. everybody dissociates, right? Ever find yourself pulling the car into the driveway and you're like, how did I get here? Because you were so lost in thought on your drive home, right? Or in the shower. That's my favorite, with the neti pot, right? Which nose did I do? Which nostril did I do? Or did I do the conditioner yet? Oh, wait, how long has it been in? Right? But if you do that to the extent that you lose touch with the thread of reality, you lose touch with a continuous sense of yourself and what's going on in your life, then we would call that dissociative fugue, or a fugue state. So the same thing is true of what is now called dissociative identity disorder, or what was previously called multiple personality disorder. We all have multiple selves, actually, or we could say sub-personalities. I am trusting that everybody in this room, though this is true, doesn't lose track of the kind of principal personality that you embody and carry with you throughout this world. And there's some folks that don't have that luxury, that do go into their sub-personalities and think that they're real. But for those of us who are here in the less extreme version of that, it's not exactly like those sub-personalities are our emotions, but I'm going to use emotions to talk about this a little bit more. So I spoke a little bit about sadness, loneliness, anger, right, yesterday, and how those all have lives of their own in them, right? Sadness has a history to it for each of us. Our experiences that molded that emotional habit in childhood and adolescence and so on, right? My loneliness has its own personality, has its own voice, right? Has its own history, has its own texture, has its own things, predilections, things, behaviors that it will drive me to do, right? Very, very different than anger. Anger has its own personality, its own voice, its own behaviors. And anger especially will take us far, far away from our continuous sense of self, take us out of our character, if you will, and lead us to do all kinds of crazy things that we would ordinarily never do, right? So we have parts, we have multiple parts that are present all the time. And we even talk this way in our culture, right? Like, I'm of two minds about something. Or ever had this fun experience when you're maybe fighting with a partner, or there's some other situation in which one part of you wants to do something that another part of you knows is a really bad idea. And this part of you says, nah, fuck it, we're doing it. And this part of you is like, no. And then you got to clean up whatever mess you made later, right? It's not only that we have these parts, and we have multiple of them that are often activated at the same time, we also have relationships to our parts, right? I want to, like I was talking about yesterday, I want to lock up my loneliness, my sadness. I want to stuff those feelings down. Right? I want to deny their existence. My anger, I have a lot of hatred towards my anger at times, a lot of shame. How is it still this way? I've been meditating for 12 years. How is it that I still flip out? Right? Anxiety, we can have a very abusive relationship to our anxiety, right? We live in an abusive relationship with ourselves, is the truth. Right? How many parts of you do you think, I would really be down with the self-love thing if only that part of me went away? Or I would be worthy, or I would be lovable if only blank part of me just cease to exist. If only I could just annihilate that part of me, obliterate it to smithereens. Wouldn't you like to do that to your angry parts? Wouldn't you like to do that to your lonely parts? Just never experience them again? That is, my friends, a violation of ahimsa. Actually, it's a subtle form of violence. Right? Talk about intimate partner violence. This is intimate no partner violence. Right? What's that? Ahimsa is the Sanskrit word for non-aggression. Non-aggression, and would be the first of the precepts in formal Buddhism and the first of the yamas in yoga, the ethical considerations in yoga. It is what Gandhi built his movement on. It is what, which then inspired MLK. My first teacher, Vinny, at Against the Stream, says, we subconsciously think we can hate ourselves into enlightenment. It's true. So we have these parts, and because of our kind of our poor awareness of them, right, we tend to do something called blending, or the fancy word is cognitive fusion, right? Whatever is going on in the mind, we think we're that. And in our culture, we say, I'm angry, don't we? As opposed to, I feel anger, which would actually be more accurate, right? So we blend, we fuse with our parts, we go into them, and then all of a sudden we're governed by their personality, that their voice, their predilections, their behaviors, right? I blend with my anger, and then all of a sudden I am at its mercy. It's driving the car. So we blend, and then when we have the moment, the opportunity to unblend, and we regain a sense of self, then there's all of these negative feelings we have towards, you know, we're talking about the realm of negative feelings, right? But we have all of these negative feelings about our feelings as well. And that's our relationship to them. Right? But what if we could enter into a process wherein we were able to unblend, step back, and ask all of the other parts of us, the parts that hate the anger, for example, to just relax? And what if it was possible for us to, in the face of anger, tune into our better wisdom, to our Buddha nature, if you will, to the natural state of mind, and then connect to these parts and learn about their history and see what they need, see what they want. As I was saying yesterday, we are an ecosystem, and everything in an ecosystem has a place. Nothing is out of order. And we are also born full of wisdom. We are born with Buddha nature and a survival instinct. Every one of our parts is actually working on our behalf in some way. For reals. Even the inner critic, which assails so many of us, at like the exact wrong time, almost every time, right? The last time I was here in the Bay Area, I taught at Against the Stream for Vinny, for my first teacher, subbing for my first teacher. My therapist from rehab was in the crowd. There was 200 people. I had never spoken into one of these Janet Jackson microphones before. And we were about to do the work that we're going to do now in this room. And I had never, you know, taught this like kind of deep emotional work to a room that size at all. And I was terrified. I was literally lying on the floor in the office trying to breathe the terror away, trying to breathe away the shakiness in my body and the trill in my voice and this sense of impending doom that, you know, it's all over. This is the moment when they find out that I'm just a total fraud. This is it. You know, I checked. Against the Stream doesn't have a back door. And the breath work wasn't working, wasn't shutting up the inner critic. It was stronger than that. And then I had a moment of clarity of like, oh, this is a part of me. Duh. It's not the real me. I'm just blended with it. So can I take a step back? And actually, what is it that this part of me wants, this inner critic? You know, and I just listened to its voice called my thoughts, which were saying, you're going to screw it up, man. You're going to screw it up. It's just like the time you peed your pants in the third grade. They're all going to find out what a shyster you are, and this is really going to hurt. Huh. I don't want to screw it up either. I'm not interested in pain. I'm not interested in the humiliation of blowing this talk. So, hey, inner critic, we're actually on the same side. Did you know that? And hey, inner critic, when you yell at me this way, it actually makes it more likely that I'm going to go out there and bomb. So how about we go out there together on the same team? I had that conversation with that anxious energy in my mind, and what happened was there was a response. It relaxed a little bit. It didn't say to me, oh, I'm going to relax now. My body relaxed, and things felt a little bit better. It didn't go away. But I went out and I sat down and I opened my iPad and I started talking and it was there. And about 3 minutes into it, it just said, oh. It just went away, and as if it was saying, I see things are going well now. Peace out. So what we're about to do is a meditation practice that I've developed. I didn't make this up. This comes from something called internal family systems therapy. And what we're about to do is parts work. And the whole idea here is that we have a family living inside of us, actually. And just like any other family member in any family on the planet, our family members, our inner family members, want the same things. They want love, they want attention, they want to be listened to, they want to be understood, they want to be respected. They don't want to be abused. They don't want to receive our hate. They don't want to receive our shame. Okay? And so we're going to engage in a meditative process. We're going to trigger some uncomfortable feelings on purpose so we can work with them. We're going to see that we blend very quickly, automatically, with those feelings. We're going to work on the intuitive skill of unblending, of taking a step back. We'll see all of the negativity in our relationship. We'll ask those parts of us to relax. Hopefully get to a place where we can feel some empathy for the struggle of whatever it is, our hurt, our sadness, our loneliness, our anger, struggling inside of us, just like another person. Our feelings are just like other people. Our parts are just like other people in every way. And then from there, enter into a conscious dialogue, actually, with the part that we meet. Generally speaking, it'll take one of two categories. There'll be a hurt part, or it'll be a part that's trying to keep us safe in some way, with varying levels of intensity. That's pretty much who we are. Love, hurt, the need for safety. And then a bunch of stories about all of that. Right? So, let's give it a shot. Yeah, get cozy. Whatever feels good. Don't sweat posture so much unless you know that will help you. And if you're lying down, I'm trusting that you won't pass out on me. Just getting comfortable and taking some shut-eye and dropping into the body. Just to have a transitional moment here, can you just breathe into the heart space again? Breathing into the heart, breathing out from the heart, just to ground yourself, relax. A gentle reminder that this is a totally safe space. This is an atmosphere of love. You have a lot of support. So, I've never had anybody need to do this, but if you need to take a break or drop out of the practice and just open your eyes and not do it, you're welcome to. This is choose your own adventure. I don't think you'll need that, but just in case, you can know that that's there. Keep breathing. The other caveat is, this is a process I would ordinarily do one-on-one with folks in the therapy room, and we would dialogue a bit during the practice. So obviously that's not going to be possible here. So the good news is this is a completely intuitive practice. The only logic to remember is what you meet along the way is a person that deserves your love. But if anything I say isn't happening for you, doesn't make sense to you, just trust your gut. And as long as you love what is, you can't get it wrong. A few more breaths. So think about a time from recent memory that you were triggered. Again, don't pick something extreme or traumatizing that's going to hijack you. This is the practice round. But some level of disappointment, of heartache, maybe anger, loneliness. Take a moment to remember whatever experience triggered that for you. You only need one experience, and it doesn't have to be the perfect one. And then play the scene of what happened in your mind's eye. What was done, what was said. Let the feelings come. They are welcome here. As the feelings come,
the consciousness shifts. But there's also a correlating sensation in the body, isn't there? Feel into the body and find where there is a tightening or a heaviness, constriction, or maybe a hollow feeling. Go to the body and find where it is and what it is. You can allow the story to fade out as you become more and more interested in the body feelings of this emotion. And now notice that there is no sense of space between you and this feeling. I'm rather sure almost every one of you have blended with the feeling. So, acknowledge that this is a part of you. It's important, but it's not the real you. And it's just like another person. Can you take a couple of steps back from that part of you? What I'll call the target part from here on out. See if you can take one or two steps back, put a little bit of space in the situation. You can even let this part of you know in your mind, in your body. I'm not going to try to push you away or beat up on you. I just want a little space so that I can get to know you. If this is all you work on for the rest of the meditation, that is fantastic. So stay at this step as long as you need to. If you've managed to unblend, I want you to notice, how do you feel towards this part of you? Be honest. Hate it, want it to go away, sick of it. So I want you to ask those feelings if they can relax and stand aside. So you can be one-on-one with the target part. And your feelings about the feelings, just relax and stand aside in a really friendly voice. Just, hey, I would really appreciate it if you fell back for a moment. Check and see what kind of feelings you're having towards the target part now. If it's negative, just can you relax? Can you relax and stand aside? What we're looking for is a place that feels clear and open inside of you, or maybe you're curious about what's going on with this part. Maybe there's a sense of empathy. Part of you that's holding so much pain, so much struggle, or is rushing to your defense in some way? And again, if you just stay at this step, that's wonderful. But if you're sensing that open space, then the next step is to just discern, is this a hurt part of you or a defensive part of you? If it's a hurt part of you, then it's really like a child part of you, isn't it? You might even be getting some images of yourself as a child. If it's a defensive part of you, it's working its ass off to try to protect you. If it's a hurt part of you, what comes next is we want to learn what this part's story is, if there's anything she needs us to know. And if it's a defensive part, the conversation needs to have a tone of friendliness, and how can we be on the same team? So just take a few minutes here to interact with this part of you and just find out what they need from you. They might need you to say you're sorry. They might need an amends. They might need you to set better boundaries. They might just need your love, and you can give that to them now. So take a few moments here. Maybe this part is throwing a tantrum. Maybe they want nothing to do with you. Whatever's going on, can you at least be a loving presence for them? The skillful adult in the room. Another 30 seconds to wrap up. And we'll start working with the breath here. As you breathe in, imagine you're able to take away the burdens of this part of you. You're breathing that in, like your breath is a vacuum. And as you breathe out, you're extending the space of compassion, which you might see as a golden light. And then you breathe in the burdens of this part again, which you might see as thick black smoke. And then it doesn't stick to you because it's turning into this golden space of compassion, this warm energy. And the next breath, you're taking away more burdens. The next exhale, more space, more light, more warmth. Over and over again, just stay with that process for a little bit. And check and see how this part is responding, if they're getting relief. More space, more and more space. Until this part of you is surrounded. Even dwarfed by how much space is being added to the situation, or growing smaller in relationship to it. Smaller and smaller. Smaller and smaller. Till they're like a speck of dust on the horizon. You just say, thank you so much. Until we meet again. Take a breath and just let it go. The work is done. Just ground yourself in your breath for just a few cycles here. As you're ready, you can just gently transition back to the room. All right. One set of instructions, 50 some odd unique experiences of those instructions. Pretty mind-blowing. So, this is our moment to get some insight from one another, to hear about each other's experiences. No TMI required, but if there's something meaningful you want to share, good or bad, or if you got stuck at any point, I'm willing to bet somebody else in the room also got stuck at that point. And so, this is our opportunity to troubleshoot this so that we can dive in and have some more productive rounds of this. So I'm just going to leave the floor open for y'all, anything that wants to be shared.
please. Oh, Mike. Yeah. Sorry. I think we're all blended. Thank you. Thank you. Okay.
So taking in that, I don't even know what you called it at the moment, but taking in that feeling and then letting go is a painful piece because it was there to protect you. And so how do you, I don't really know what my question is other than the pain of letting that go. There's also fear that that will not be there to protect you anymore.
Yeah. So good question. The truth is we were born with these parts, and they're not going anywhere. Where it gets problematic and messy is our parts carry so much of our struggle. They're burdened, and they're informed by those burdens. So the goal here is kind of twofold. One is to help those parts become less burdened, less afflicted. And two, to get them to trust us. Because the heart of the matter really is that our parts don't trust us. One, because they've been mistreated by us. We've beaten up on ourselves so many times. And then two, because remember yesterday when I said our Buddha nature, the love that we were born with, wouldn't have been able to survive high school or grade school or neglectful parents or whatever happened for you. So those parts became conditioned. It's a common thing in psychoanalysis to say, you know, like we develop our defenses in childhood and then we outgrow them in adulthood because we're much more resourced in adulthood, right? But somehow those defenses are already ingrained in us, and so we stick with them. Same thing here. These parts of us, so the defensive part, was conditioned in childhood when you were far less resourced than you are today. And so it thinks our emotional selves get stuck in time. They really do, and I can unpack that more in a bit. But they think that we're still that unresourced child, and that they need to drive the ship, that, you know, our anger or whatever is really going to do the job of keeping us safe, which from an evolutionary point of view, anger does a marvelous job of keeping us safe. It's just that it ruins everything else. So that defensive part of you, we're not looking to get rid of it. We're looking to help it feel less afflicted and for you to have a better, more trusting relationship with it, because wouldn't it be wonderful if you had some agency in that relationship, if it didn't just come in and hijack you, and instead you could, you know, access that part and maybe set a boundary, make a different choice, like that. Or if somebody's coming at you the wrong way and you need to defend yourself, take a breath and not be so quick to react, you know, but still stick up for yourself. Every one of our parts, every one of our emotions has two sides. Neurotic, wisdom. Right? Anger, there is a neurotic form of anger. Right? We all know that side of anger. I don't have to unpack that. But there's wisdom to anger. It is bloody right to be mad at what's going down in our country right now. That is wise. That is an anger that is telling us, hello, something is off. And here's a whole bunch of energy, right, to use productively in the face of that. So anger is a great alarm bell for boundaries are being crossed. We need to act. It makes a mess when we go to the neurotic side, you know, of it. But if so...
Can I ask a quick follow-up?
Yeah, please. Sorry.
So what about the balance of power anger, when you're letting that go, there's a perception, even if it's coming from a wise place, mm-hmm. the power or behind anger is in itself meaningful. So if you're coming from a wise place, the power decreases. And so maybe you lose its worth.
Well, we're a little hypothetical now, right? We're in a maybe. We're in a what if, right? I will say that we tend to believe that if we weren't so juiced up all the time, we wouldn't be able to get the job done, right? Isn't it? And I'm not sure that that's accurate. So yes, please tell me your name again, my friend, if we could pass the mic back first. Thank you. I'm getting it.
Kind of going off like what she, her last thing said, and even relating this to the president, whereas ignorance is strength, and therefore you're never really wrong. You're able to keep the power regardless of you're wrong or right. You just refuse to admit.
Mm.
Whereas if you're wise, I feel like you have more guidance to do the right thing. But if you're arrogant, you keep your power. Even if you're wrong, you're still right because you're right.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really know what your thoughts are on that. Or
Yeah. Power is such a strong variable in all of our relationships. Because relationships always entail some level of exposure. You know, if I'm in relationship with you, then you can hurt me. And guess what? Relationships are at the core of everything that's hurt us. Right? But therefore, they're also what can heal us the most. But, yeah. You know, when I was working a lot with kids at an outpatient clinic in Harlem, you know, we would unpack their aggressive experiences they would have in school. Okay, so why did you punch that kid? Well, because you said that to me. Okay, well, let's think about that for a second. How did that make you feel when he said that to me? Okay, angry. But if you didn't feel anger, what would you feel? Like he was like, you know, he thought he was better than me, right? Oh, so he's going up here, and so you hit him so that you could feel up here. Right? But then what happened next? He hit me back. Okay, so now he's up here and you're down here, and so you got to go up here, right? And this is all about power. It's all about who's in control, who's above who, right? But the fact of the matter is that you reacted because this guy said something to you, and then you had to act according to that, means you gave him the power. What if you had just turned around and walked away? How would this person have felt? Pretty stupid? Oh. You mean you would have won? You know? So there's a power struggle present in all of our relationships. I'm not sure if I'm speaking to your point. But,
I'm thinking of it, making sense of it, so thank you.
I mean, this is something I actually learned from Becky up here about... when there's a low desire partner in relationships, that's also a power struggle. When in any relationship, if one person wants to do something and the other person doesn't, the person who says no always has the power, right? They better, ideally. But, you know, even if it's just I want to go to the movies and this person says, I want to stay in and, you know, cook, whatever. The person who says, no, I don't want to do that, now has the power. And that creates a whole dynamic in relationships as well. You know, this person might feel bad for saying no. This person might resent this person for saying no. You know. Anyhow, so back to the practice. Back to the practice. Please, if we could pass the mic, we'll go here and then over here. Actually, okay, great. Thank you.
Morning.
Good morning.
I had loneliness was my feeling, and I left a relationship about 6 weeks ago, and every day, usually when I leave work, it's usually about 5 o'clock, I get overwhelmed with loneliness and I just cry. And I've identified that as because I've become unbusy all of a sudden, and I'm transitioning to home to be with myself. So I took loneliness into this practice, and it took me back to my original trauma. I was an infant. And somehow I related that to, and so what my infant was telling me was I needed consistency and safety and attention. And since I broke up this relationship, this person's been with me 24/7, even here. And I wondered what that was about. And I came to realize that my infant and her infant experience the same thing. And what I'm attached to is she my hurt parts? You know, I'm still so connected to her because maybe I'm trying to heal the hurt parts that I see so clearly in her. And then I listed things that she did that upset me, but I do them also out of my hurt parts.
Yeah.
And I need to be friends with those hurt parts. And my feeling around them was disgust, to be honest, neediness.
Yeah.
And I need to become friends. I was very compassionate to her, with her parts, but I'm very hard on myself for mine, and it really led to me to have self-compassion for myself that I could reflect in somebody else.
Yeah.
I hope that made sense.
Yeah, it does. So what we're doing in this practice is we're giving the unconscious mind an arena to come forward into consciousness. This is hypnosis without the hypnotizing part. And the unconscious mind, its language is symbols and metaphor, right? So, you know, this previous partner symbolizes, because you identify so many of the same traits with this hurt part, right? Makes sense? So, yeah, thank you for sharing that. And so we're going to go over here, and then somebody over here? Okay, great. Thanks for passing the mic, like the Beastie Boys song.
Yeah, I was just going to say that this practice was, like, really helpful for me. Sort of like what other people were saying, like I tend to like be really hard on myself and like more compassionate for others. So I think for this, and like I go to therapy, so I'm sort of used to like talking about my problems but not really like listening almost. So I sort of just like the way I envisioned it was like me listening to this, who I was in this situation. And I think she just wanted to be heard, like she or me. In that situation, I just felt really, like, out of control and, like, sort of, like, not in my element and on an uneven playing field. And I feel like that made me sort of act out in ways that wasn't me because I was, like, so uncomfortable. So I don't know if it's because I'm, like, more visual, but I sort of just imagined, like, listening to her and, like, not judging her, almost like she was, like, different. And then, like, at the end, I sort of, like, imagined, like, putting, like, a jacket on her to like make her feel like more herself so that she could then act how she would normally if she wasn't feeling out of control. And then I like flew away. That was my
brilliant. I love it. Nice use of symbolism. Actually, we need to go, if we could pass it back, we're going to go next door and then up here.
I'm just need a little clarification. Yeah. I was thinking of a trigger. And then loneliness came up, and then shortly thereafter, shame showed up. And so I was like, where do I go? Were those both the targets? And I just needed to pick one. I got a little lost.
Anybody else have that experience of like you're creating a holding environment inside of yourself, and then all of a sudden all the afflicted parts are like, no, me. I too want the love. Right? So
it was easy for me when I did think about the shame to really be compassionate and do that. And then I'm like, wait, what about loneliness? Like, I don't know if I was doing it right. I'd like more guidance. So if we do this again, I can get more out of it.
As I said, as long as you care for what appears before you, you're fine. You're not going to do any damage, right? But
So the logic over and over again is we are interacting with parts of us that they are just like other people in every single way. And so what I like to do personally when that happens is, hey, which one of you wants to come forward? I can only meet with one of you right now. Which one of you wants to come forward? And it'll be, almost every time, it'll be the more defensive part, the part that feels stronger, that has more resources. But yeah, and what's that? Yeah. Yeah, like the email, right, yeah. I just got to say, like, isn't this wild, too, that, you know, that this happened for, I think, all of you, that this felt real and you had these real experiences. It blows me away every time.
Well, would shame be defensive or hurt? Like, I was also having trouble with that. I was like, yeah. Which one is it?
Good question. So, good question.
Because I could see it being both.
You can ask the shame. A good indicator is defensive parts tend to take over us. They're the ones we tend to indulge. And then the hurt parts of us are the ones that we tend to repress. So in internal family systems language, the hurt parts are, we call them exiles, or sometimes basement children. They're the kids we try to keep locked up, but we can still hear them screaming through the floorboards sometimes, right? And then there's actually two types of, we'll unpack this a lot more later, but there's actually two types of defensive parts. There's our managers, the ones that are trying to kind of work on the preventative side, like, don't do that, you're going to screw it up, right? And then there's the firefighters. And those the firefighters are who emerges when the basement kids get out. And the firefighters look like compulsive behavior, generally, acting out. Right? So, yeah. You've been so patient. Thank you.
I was just going to say, it reminds me of Inside Out, the movie.
Yep.
With, like, all the little...
Yeah. People. Why have I not worked that into this talk?
So, thank you for that exercise. It was really helpful.
Right.
I struggled with the same with you, and I think a few people have mentioned it, differentiating between the hurt and the defensive.
Mm-hmm.
So my feeling was betrayal, and I had both,
mm-hmm.
defensive and hurt.
Mm-hmm.
I ended up going with hurt,
mm-hmm.
But I struggled with kind of figuring out which was bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And so just any insight you have into the questioning, because I really, the questions I had weren't so much questions, just kind of listening, and I used a lot of color, so it was like pink clouds and pink kind of nurturing colors,
mm-hmm.
and that helped.
Yeah, nice. It sounds like you felt into your own experience in a fantastic way, and that there was some nebulousness as to what was what, but you were able to discern quite nicely. The only thing I would add is that, you know, You can ask of your own system what is needed, who needs to come forward, like that. Yeah. I once gave this workshop, and this woman who was very visual entered into a game show with her defensive parts. So as, again, unconscious mind, as symbolic and as colorful and as wild as we want to be with it, is wonderful. We do want to stay in touch with the body and not just go up to fantasy. It's happening in the mind, but again, the body is the mind, essentially. And when we'll know when we're in fantasy, because our energy literally almost leaves the body. It's like up here. You'll notice that when you can't sleep at night because you're super worried about things, you're completely, you're not even in your head. You're like out here. Good. Anybody get totally stuck? Like, dude, that did not work. Curious. Yes. One in the back, and then we'll come up here, Becky. So if we could pass the mic
Too many MCs, not enough mics.
I thought that was quite an interesting exercise. I had a relationship issue that caused me a lot of pain, and I went into that, and I felt the pain in my heart, but then it moved down into my stomach, and I felt my stomach start to gurgle, and I actually felt my stomach bloat, and I thought that was the defensive part, you know, but what came to mind was like this large globule of fat, and I couldn't dissolve it. It was just stuck there. Mm-hmm. And there was no way that I could get it to dissipate. And I realized that I was trying to make it just vanish, go away. But, I mean, I think that's where I got stuck. It's like, now what do I do? I don't know how to handle this. I might understand the process and realize there's the validity there, but... Mm-hmm. It just wasn't going to go away that quickly,
yeah.
If at all. I don't know.
To use Tara Brach's very saccharine words, tend and befriend. Right? That is really how healing work is done, is when we drop the want, paradoxically, counterintuitively enough, the want to make it go away, to fix, to heal, to spiritualize. And we just instead, like Pema Chodron, the story about Pema Chodron yesterday, the best way to help somebody is just really be present for them. Just open yourself and listen, you know. Yeah. But good question.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Oh, Becky.
I just wanted to share something that surprised me in the beginning, which was that, so anger was the feeling that came up. And then, like, almost instantly, I was, like, overcome with the desire to laugh. And I was more, like, going into the content of the story in my mind of what I was angry about. Mm-hmm. And I was like, God, this is so silly that I'm like angry about this thing. And I was watching myself like trying to discount my anger. Mm-hmm. And then when it was really helpful when you said to let go of, what was your instruction? To like, I don't think you said story, but it was like something like that. Like let go of the description of the feeling or whatever. Mm-hmm. So then I got to just like feel it somatically, and then I was able to go into it. Mm-hmm. But there was an almost immediate like, no, this isn't like, I don't need to be angry about this.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Hmm. So the part that you were working with was able to relax.
Yeah, later. Not okay. At that point.
Okay.
At that point, it got more intense.
Okay.
Yeah. But later, I was able to.
Okay. Okay. Cool. Thank you. All right. We'll go two more, and then we're going to dive in for another experience. So, we'll go here, please. Thank you.
Thank you. In my meditation, or the practice, I came about. It was an instant in which it came up that I was sad. And so I was holding, and the idea was, I'm a failure. Mm. And so I was holding that thought as this, you know, thinking that was the one that needed some work. And that was making me feel better. And then all of a sudden there was this taunting voice said, but you are a failure. And I'm just trying to figure out, where did that one come from? Couldn't fit it into your scheme. I mean, this voice was quite strong. Like, neener, neener, neener. I mean, you are a failure.
Yeah, yeah.
So who might that be?
Right. God.
sorry. You just lost the lottery. That's all.
That part of you, what could possibly be the motivation behind some part of you saying you're a failure? What could possibly be going on that's motivating that part?
I was wondering if that was still trying to be a protective voice.
Well, let's run with that for a second. In what way would thinking that you're a failure protect you?
Well, then at least I know where my thoughts are right.
Okay, they're right?
They're right. That's true. So okay. Now let's just live with that.
Okay, but how is that protecting you from something?
Actually, it's not, but I'm suddenly thinking while you're saying this that maybe that then gives me then relief because, okay, if that voice says, you know, I'm a failure, phew, that's what I thought all along. Oh, fine. I was vindicated.
Ah.
I don't know where you'd go with that, but at least it felt maybe I was vindicated in some way.
Right. So, okay, that's true. We can run with that. And where my mind goes is now it's okay to stay small, not be seen, not try, to just kind of live a status quo life like the rest of American society, just try to get cozy up and live out your days that way rather than really live authentically and with some exposure and love, right? We can hide out if we're a failure.
Yeah.
Nothing to risk.
Having said all this and discussed this, that makes good sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome. We had one more. It was up here, right? Yeah. Okay. You're repping the folks in my periphery. I see. I appreciate that.
All right. I had a similar experience to a lot of people where when you asked if it was defensive or hurt, I didn't know. I kind of labeled it as hurt, and it kind of told me no.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, no, but, well, then what are you? I actually, like, kind of in that kind of antagonistic tone, well, like, what do you want then? And that's when it became very clear that it was a defensive part.
Hmm.
And for me, it was fear and anxiety. And so the image in my mind was of, you know, sometimes I have a hard time getting out of bed because I'm just like drawn up in the fetal position with so much anxiety.
Hmm.
And my body started doing that. I started closing in. And then once I realized it was a defensive part and that it was trying to protect me, I was like, okay, I can work with that a little bit. And so I opened up my posture. I said, I'm going to talk to you from like a kind of a not, I guess, not enmeshed place. And then once I opened up my posture a little bit, I was able to talk to it and kind of see what it wanted. But I got very, very trapped in it for a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. I'm glad you had that direct experience. It's wild, right? Yeah, so cool. So cool. Clarity is golden. Hard won and golden. Clarity on its own. Awareness, true awareness on its own does so much. The moment you saw that this is a part that's trying to defend me, it's why I'm shrinking up, I'm going to relate to you from this place. Shifts things. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. Just in case I've turned a blind blind eye over here. Anything else? Okay. So it's 12. I want to go in for one more experience. Can we be quick-ish? Okay, good. All right. This is my codependent side. I can't say no.
Mine was a very physical reaction, and it was coming very painful from my right side underneath my shoulder blade, coming across and then pulsing up into my head.
Could you put the mic down closer?
Yeah. So my experience was very physical. and it came from my right shoulder blade up into my head, and I could feel the blood rushing into my head, and I almost had a panic attack.
Mm.
And then you said something about your childhood, reaching into your childhood memories, and then another one bubbled up right from the core and sort of popped the other bubble, which you had mentioned, you know, hijacking for all these children coming up. So in reaction, I just tried to breathe more deeply
mm-hmm.
and calm it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure if I actually was healing it or stuffing it back down.
Right. So. It sounds to me, and you let me know if I'm right, like you didn't quite get the space from it. You didn't quite unblend. Like it was so powerful that you stayed right there. There wasn't space. Is that true?
I thought I was getting space.
Okay.
So the first reaction I was getting space from, and then okay. You said the child.
And then the second one came in.
The second one came in, and I'm not sure that I unblended okay. from that one.
Okay. So, again, what do you think was the motivation behind these emotional reactions? Why do they exist?
Well, it's packed in there pretty well. So I'm sure it's a combination of many different things. And,
okay.
But it just surprised me that the more current one was from a different part of my body.
Right.
And the childhood one was...
With respect to your privacy, were these parts of you saying anything to you? Were there any sharp thoughts? You don't have to tell me what.
I'd rather not.
Yes?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. We're going to, after lunch, we'll talk about intrusive voices that are particularly strong like this and how to work with them. But for right now, the micro version of that talk is engage them at the level of thought and listen to what they're saying. And find the logic in what that part is saying. It's not crazy. It's not irrational. There's some logic there that needs to be heard. When people feel heard, they don't scream. And there's something there's some kernel of truth, perhaps, in what's being said. Does that make sense? And you can also let this part of you know, hey, I'm just here to get to know you. I see what you're saying, right? And you yelling at me like this doesn't do us any good, right? But I think you, it sounds like you handled yourself right. Like you just breathed and gave yourself some space and just kind of let it be. We'll continue, and thank you for trusting me.
Thank you.
Which is evident by the fact that you're still in your seat. You didn't run out screaming. So. Okay. All right. Yeah. In the name of lunch. Okay. All right. Good questions. And I know two of you joined us for the first time during that. And did you pick up on what's going on? You pretty much got it? All right. So we're going to go in for another experience wherein we'll trigger some feelings on purpose. We'll see that we blend with those feelings. We'll work on unblending, relax our relationship to that part, and see if we can enter into a skillful interaction. Just get comfortable. Drop into the body. Feel the breath. Feel it in the space of the heart, rising and falling as you breathe in and out. You are welcome to make it less intense this time. And think of something that irritated you. You are welcome to think to work with the same part. You can check with your body, with your system, and see if the same energy wants to percolate up to the surface. And if you're just tuning in, you can think of just something that's upset you from recent memory, not so strong that it will hijack you. So, get in touch. If stories start to play in the mind, let them play. If multiple feeling tones are rising to the surface, allow them. You can even say to your feelings, you're welcome here. I've been waiting for you. Use the story in the head to trigger the feelings in the body until they're really present. Then go to the body and feel it. What's going on in the body? Is it tingling? Is it pulsing? Is it sharp? Is it dull? Is it warm or is it cool? Is it heavy or light? And is there any space between you and the feeling? You've blended with the feeling. That's natural. And I want you to see if you can take a step back without repressing. You can remind this part of you that you're unblending from, that you're safe, that you're here on a mission of love only. And how do you feel towards this part of you? And you simply and warmly ask those feelings about this part to relax. I hate it. Relax. I'm ashamed of feeling this way. Just please relax. Asking your whole system to relax so you can be one-on-one with this part of you that's triggered. And we're looking for a space of clarity or openness or maybe empathy. But at least you're open to being here with this part. So if there's resistance, resistance can relax. Till that open center is revealed. A little different this time. This time, say to this part, I am completely here with you. So curious about who you are, how we can not be so abusive to one another. See how this part of you responds to that. See if they acknowledge you back or if there's any change in feeling tone. Is this a part that you try to keep locked in the basement, or is this a part that takes over in the name of safety? And if it's a hurt part of you, just go to it again and let this part of you know. You recognize its childlikeness. You can take that part of you in your arms and just feed it love like you would a little baby. Listen to anything it has to say. Okay. And if you have a hurt part of you present, go ahead and ignore everything else I say. If you're working with a defensive part of you, this time I want you to ask, what do you think would happen if you relaxed? It's going to tell you which hurt part of you it's protecting through that. And see if this defensive part is willing to relax and let you access the more hurt part so you can hold it like a child and listen to its story. If it's a defensive part of you or a part that is just unwieldy, can you try to discern its motivations? Listen to what it's saying. Acknowledge its feelings. You are perfectly right for feeling the way that you do. And I'm really interested in how we can mend this relationship. These are the two tones. Either you're interacting with a child or you are interacting with a part that needs to be befriended, perhaps desperately. Follow your intuition and have your interaction, whatever needs to happen here. Just another 30 seconds. And then this time, go ahead and wrap anything up that needs to be wrapped up. And then this time, we will practice loving kindness for whichever part you're working with. And if there's multiple present, that's fine too. You can do this for your whole body, your whole system. If that's warranted, or it can be for one part only. May you be filled with love. May you feel safe and held. May your burdens heal. May you be free. I want you to be free. May you be filled with love. May you feel safe. May you be healed. May you be free. One last, may you be filled with love, surrounded by love. May you feel safe. May you heal. and may you be free. Just see if you can really, for one last little moment here, really wrap this part of you in the arms of love, in the arms of goodwill. You can say thank you to all of your parts for being present. Maybe it's a work in progress, but the wisdom is there. We can uncover it together. Say goodbye for now. Take a breath and gently transition back to the room at your own pace. Energy in this room deepened so much on that round. Oh. We're going to take a break in just a moment. Something tells me that might be welcome for some of you to really switch gears right now. Questions? Complaints? Yes, please wait for the mic, please.
I got a little stuck. Okay. When you bring it into the body, it's hard. It makes it very difficult for me to separate from it then. Because I don't, once it's there, it feels like it's me.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't find the me that's not it.
Mm.
And because I usually go to the me that's not it. When I connect to body, because I connect to physical sensation as a grounding.
Interesting.
So I'm a little, yeah.
So it's like the instruction, let go. How on earth do I do that? Right? Where's the instruction manual on how to let go, you know? And unblending is a form of letting go, right? It's a form of disidentifying, ending the fusion. And so two roads you can take. One is, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So, you know, stay with the feeling in the psyche, if that helps you to have a more fruitful practice. Option number two is, hey, this is just where you are right now with it. You're working on the unblending step. And that will change just like any practice over time with repetition. And in the first round of it, I said, you know, if this is all you work on for the rest of this practice, that's magnificent, because just being able to do that step, feel it in the body, take a step back, is a game changer on its own, you know? Please. And then we'll come back. Yeah.
Can you talk more about the difference between a hurt part and a defensive part?
Yes. After lunch. It's actually, there's another unedited rough draft chapter from my book in here that is called The Four Dimensions of Psyche. And we can go through this together a little bit later. But basically, defensive parts are always protecting hurt parts. Hurt parts are the parts of us that got roughed up in childhood that we did not have the capacity to process or to meet fully. And so somebody had to come in and keep that kid safe, you know, figure out a way to manage, whether that was staying small or getting tough or shutting down or, you know, or acting out. So that's the basic gist, but we'll get more detailed soon, I promise. And then we had one more question over here.
Maybe not really a question, but I thought it would be helpful just to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And you had expressed your experience with performing.
Mm.
And so a couple months ago, I was, quote, performing. And it was a dance with, say, there was six of us in front of an audience. And I really messed up. So I was totally out of sync. And afterwards, I had this, like, extreme emotion that I felt. And it's like, wow, where did that come from? You think by this age, I wouldn't have these extreme emotions or feel so embarrassed or feel so humiliated. And I tried to, everyone tried to give me the rational about it. But I thought I would go into that, even though it was uncomfortable for me right now. And it was really uncomfortable in that I realize that it kind of stemmed from an experience that I had from childhood, similar to your bathroom experience. Okay. So, and in this, my little child, it was really hard to get her to feel safe. She didn't want me to to appease her. And she kept saying, nothing is going to make this right. I'm totally embarrassed. I'm totally humiliated. I never associated it completely with this before. But then there was finally a figure in that I've had in my life that was there and made it safe. So,
Nice work.
So, anyway, but when I go back there, it's still extremely uncomfortable with that feeling and that untrusting people to be safe.
Mm-hmm. There's still some burdens there.
Yeah.
So, so for everybody, this is where you are with it now. Every time you come back to this, it will change. So just in case anybody's like, oh, great, it's going to be like this forever. Thanks. I'm requesting a refund. And, so we're going to do... Yeah, what were they? I'm feeling so low blood sugar right now, quite honestly, but with the hurt part, what did we ask? For some reason, I'm blanking. That's ridiculous. Right. Somebody help me out here. What did we say? I'm serious. Like, I'm practically pre-diabetic.
What do you need?
Yeah. What, the protective part we asked, what do you think would happen if you would relax? Because that will tell us what the protective part is protecting. Right. With the child part we just held. Sorry, I blanked for a second there. Let's do just a really quick cleansing meditation to help us all switch gears into lunch mode. It's going to be 90 seconds, so no need to get formal about this. But just gently close your eyes. And I want you to just imagine the sun shining in the sky like it is right outside. Crystal clear blue sky, and sun is shining right on your face. Sun is shining right on your face. It's warm, it's nourishing, it feels good. And maybe even the backs, the colors along the backs of your eyelids start to brighten in response to receiving that light. Maybe there's an inclination to even tilt your chin upwards to receive more of that nourishing light. And the light is shining so strong, the rays of the sun so strong, that the light begins to sink down past the skin layer and into the head. You feel it in the brain. You feel it trickling down your throat and through your jaw. You feel it in the shoulders. You feel it going down your arms and into your fingers. Sun is shining so strongly that you feel its warmth in your chest and down through the mid-body, down into the belly and the low back. You feel it in your pelvis. You feel it in your thighs and in your knees and in the lower legs and down through the feet. The light is shining all the way through you and down into the earth. Child of the sky, child of the earth. That's who we really are. Have a fantastic lunch. Let's take a little bit of a longer one today. So it's 12:30 now. Can we meet back here at 2? We'll do 90 minutes. Yesterday was a little brief. If anybody feels like they need to check in, I'm here, okay?
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.